This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, hour number two as we roll along this morning. Man, what a game last night in Major League Baseball yesterday with the, I should say last night, the Phillies and the Padres. You get a game with four hits, and every one of them matters so much in the intensity of a baseball game. And then Kyle Schwarber hitting a monster home run. The Phillies win that game, but one thing we know about the Padres is that they can bounce back and bounce back pretty good. They were down 1-0 to the Dodgers and came back and won that series, and they'll have that game today, later on today. The Yankees go on to beat the Cleveland Indians 5-1, and they've got the Astros in the American League Championship Series. But as we continue along with the month of October, there are so many different angles that we've got in terms of sports, right? The NBA opened yesterday with the Celtics beating the Sixers and then Golden State raising up their banner and taking on the Lakers. And I wondered this yesterday with Lee Ellis, and I was kind of thinking about that. I watched a little bit of the game of the Warriors-Lakers. You know, look, the core that's there, the Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry core, they are surrounded by some good young players. But the Western Conference is loaded with good young players. Nikola Jokic is a two-time MVP, and they got 48 wins last year, and I don't know how they even got that with as many injuries as that team went through in different circumstances. They might win 60 this year. The Memphis Grizzlies are getting better. Luka Doncic is in Dallas. Devin Booker is in Phoenix. You look around, and there is a wave of good young teams coming for the crown. Golden State had a very interesting run over the last number of years, right? They got this little dynasty going, and then they had their own problems, right? Klay was out with injury, and Kevin Durant was gone, and they went through their problems, but then they regained the crown as if to say, look, everybody, slow down. I love you, Phoenix. Good job, Dallas. Good job, Utah. All these teams that had a little bit of a moment in the sun, but the reality of it is it belongs to us. Oh, yeah, Lakers in the bubble. Good luck. Denver, you're not quite there. It's still ours. We just had our problems, and now we get it back. But I'm telling you, the wave in the West is going to be really fun to watch. These young players cannot be held back that long. And I wonder how tough it's going to be for the Warriors to repeat. But I like what Lee Ellis said yesterday. This is not a team in pursuit of 70 wins and whatnot. This is a team that'll go through the motions. They'll go through their ups and downs. They'll be pacing themselves because they know exactly what to do in the playoffs. But when the young players in this league get more playoff experience, that tactic isn't going to work very, very much. That tactic is going to be very problematic.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, and the dumb Wednesday edition. Oh, boy, I can't wait. Let's get things rolling with the good of the day.
You know what? I started talking and my mic wasn't on. That probably helps out.
Well, that might be a bad of the day.
It might be a bad of the day. The good of the day, the Waste Management Open in Phoenix.
Yes.
Along with three other tournaments have been granted elevated status by the PGA.
What does that mean?
This means that the purse will be even higher, which will attract more of the bigger stars to the tournament.
Aren't some of those getting the bigger guys anyway?
They do. I mean, Waste Management does because of how much fun it is.
Yeah.
But you know, the other three tournaments are the RBC Heritage, the Wells Fargo Championship, and the Travelers Championship. Pretty much putting it on par of, like, you know, the Players Championship, the BMW Championship.
Okay, well, there's a couple of things about that, right? So the Waste Management Open, that's a very popular one.
Yeah.
A lot of people like to go there because part of it's kind of the mid. It's like they do the West Coast Swing, and it sort of goes there, and everybody likes that place. The RBC Heritage is always the one that follows the Masters. And it's always been an easy golf course. It's not a really hard course. It's on Hilton Head. It's one of those courses like, well, we were just in Augusta. We might as well go make another six-figure paycheck while we're here.
Right.
Like, let's just stop. So a lot of people who play in the Masters play in it. The Travelers has done a really good job because for some reason the course is great. It's in Connecticut. The course is great. And if you ever been around a golf tournament or been, you know, they offer perks to the players to come. Every tournament wants the best players. So they'll say, like, hey, if you come and commit to our tournament, we've got this for your kids and this for your wife, and you guys can do this, and we've got this experience, and we'll take you to a ball game, and there's all sorts of perks for the players. And they say the Travelers just is amazing. What an experience. So good that they're highlighting the ones that are the players really, really like anyway. They're not trying to bump up an event that like nobody wants to go to. Like, I was like, oh, we got to go there. And they go, well, now it's more money. Oh, but we still don't want to go there. They're like, no, you guys like going to these things, and now there's more money attached to it. So that's great. That's good. The PGA Tour, I hate to say this, one day I want to get like, I want to wait till it all sort of settles down, but I'd love to have Ryan Ballingy or Will Gray on again to sort of go, now that we've had a number of months of this, what was the effect of LIV Golf? Like, what did it do? Because it feels like they're responding to LIV. Like, LIV is plowing along, paying millions and millions of dollars, and the PGA Tour is like, okay, we'll do some things different now.
And finding extra money every step of the way.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
That's one thing I've noticed. Like, oh, maybe we'll make the, you know, give these four tournaments, we'll make their purse a little bit larger, which will attract bigger stars.
And all I know of a sudden, Phil Mickelson might be right about it.
Yep.
He just didn't go about it the right way. So, but now they find money. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah, there's no more money. Yeah, there is. Okay. Yeah, there is.
There may or may not be a vault underneath PGA headquarters.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And this is what some of these golfers have been saying the whole time. It's like, you guys, you're a nonprofit, but not really, right?
Right.
I mean, it's like, so, yeah.
I'm excited because I would love to see, you know, I mean, the Waste Management Open is by far one of my favorite tournaments.
Yeah.
You know, it was the best tournament I've ever been to. Just because, I mean, just the sights and the sounds, the people are incredible. I mean, it's a party, really. It's not even, I didn't even feel like a golf tournament. It feels
but
like it's a,
but does
a
more
four
money,
day party.
Does more money make it more enjoyable?
I don't know if more money makes it more enjoyable. I just think it'll attract some of the bigger stars. Now, I mean, this one attracted stars on its own because of, you know, the atmosphere. Hole 16 is, you know, something different than anything else.
But it's
there.
It's TPC Scottsdale. It's one of the more it's one of the better courses that they play. So
it comes at a perfect time because you're playing on a nice golf course, usually clear weather. Perfect weather, it's a little bit warm outside. So.
Yeah. It's like a lot of these ones, they're sort of built in to attract the bigger names anyway, but it's good to see that they're acknowledging that work that those courses and that those tournaments have done.
Yeah. I guess it's a thing like it's for the PGA to give it another top tier status type thing.
Yeah, exactly. All right, what's the bat of the day?
Tom Brady. He had some tone. I'm going to really say tone deaf comments the other day.
All right.
When he was on a podcast and he was comparing the NFL season to going away on deployment for the military.
Why do they do this?
I mean, I get what he's saying, right?
Because you're away from your family.
You're 100% committed into what your job is. So you're not really home that often. Maybe there's an odd weekend, the bye week. Maybe you're home.
Bunch of crap!
I don't. I mean, you really want to make a fan base mad? Then you say something
what
like
a
this.
Bunch of crap! Like. Oh. First of all, there are very few teams in the NFL now that have training camp at a location where they're living in dorms. There are a few that still do it. The Steelers still practice at Latrobe. There's a couple of others that Oxnard, California
Cowboys.
For the Cowboys, right? There's still a couple of them where they're like, training camp is here on this college and you're living in the dorm. And then it's right now training camps are at the facility and you go home. You go to your house and you show up for work for training camp. Like you go home to your wife and kids and then you wake up in the morning and you drive to the facility and to the same place that you're going to go to prepare games. A lot of teams now have their training camp at that exact location. So that's not like being deployed in the military. That's like going to a job for everybody else in America. Second of all, when you travel with an NFL team, and let's say you are the Atlanta Falcons and you travel to Los Angeles to play the Rams, And then the next week you're playing Seattle like they did this year. You might spend a week in Seattle working out at like Washington Huskies Stadium or whatever it is. You know, you might find a college where you're like, can we just practice on your practice? Great, fine. Because we don't want to go back to Atlanta to go back to the West Coast. But for the most part, you fly in very, very, you, like toward the weekend, and then you fly out immediately after the game, even if it's a Monday night game or a Sunday night game, right? Remember the famous story of the Giants in 2001 when they played Monday night football against the Denver Broncos. They flew all night back to New York. While 9/11 was happening, they were at the airport. A lot of them were at the airport. A lot of them saw it as they were getting ready to leave and go back home. So they fly back as soon. They don't stay. They don't stay a week when they're on the road. Like, so this idea that you dedicated to your job. Like, a lot of people are dedicated to their jobs, but it's not being in Iraq for 8 months or 9 months. It's not the same thing. Months. It's not even close.
Here's what he said. He said, I almost look at like a football season, like you're going away on deployment for the military. And it's like, man, here I go again.
Really?
The reality is, he continued, is you can really only be authentic to yourself, right? Whatever you may say, oh, man, I want you, blah, 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 whatever. I'm tired of reading this.
If you are a guy that dedicates, you know, you're studying tape, that's fine. If you're one of the coaches that's there at 4 a.m. until midnight, okay, but that's not every player. That's not the play. Like, you can take work home. You can study at home. Like, there's no reason to pretend like being an NFL player, you can't have a wife and kids. Or if you have a wife and kids, you never see them. You don't even know what they look like, right? Like, there are servicemen and women who have not seen their families for months and months and months, like, except on Zoom calls. Like, you're at least going home to your, if your wife's not there, that's between you and your wife. If your kids aren't there, that's between you and your wife. But you at least are going home. Where does Tom Brady think he's sleeping every night during the football season? On a cot?
He's sleeping in the swamp.
Is he in a barrack? Like, what is this comparison is dumb.
He's in the swamp with Hawkeye and Pierce.
Yeah, gambling. Right? Exactly, right? Trying to get Hot Lips to come over have a drink. Goodness gracious. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
Hold on, I lost my screen. There we go. The dumb of the day is that controversy has rocked New Zealand again.
New Zealand. When you say again, what was the first one?
The first one was when they were trying to choose the bird of the year. A few years back, the bird of the year ended up being a bat, and that made people's heads spin.
Ah, there you go.
This year, in trying to determine the bird of the year, they really want this one bird to win, but it was disqualified amid allegations of election interference. The reason why I bring this up, Tony, is because the bird is called the kakapo.
Yeah.
Right? It's a flightless bird, but also known as the world's fattest parrot.
Oh, okay.
And they're just, I don't know. How do you get voter fraud in a bird of the year competition?
I'm sort of confused.
This is big news in New Zealand.
Apparently, this is rocking New Zealand.
This is rocking New Zealand that they can't get the fattest parrot in the world a New Zealand bird of the year status because of voter fraud.
Yeah.
That's how they do things down there.
I got no comment on that. It's like, I don't want to rip their culture. Maybe bird of the year is important. Maybe that is something that they go, listen, you don't get it, man. You don't live in New Zealand. But if you lived in New Zealand,
it's a big deal. In the past 17 years, their bird of the year has become an election.
Really? How do we determine these kind of things? Like, when people say Montana's state bird is, like, who decided that?
Well, I mean, this changes though. Each year, you know, you gotta have a new bird of the year.
So,
a new
what
dog
do they do
the
with
year.
The bird? Like, do they get a couple of these birds and give them awards and put little medals on their neck?
Maybe.
Go, congratulations!
You know,
like,
feed them a little extra.
How is your life different tomorrow if the eagle was the bird of the year
in New Zealand? That's blasphemy,
right? Well, wait. I mean, how many, what birds, like, if you're going to give a bird every year, a bird of the year, don't they have multiple birds?
I think you're right. They must have multiple birds.
Can you win twice?
I would assume you can.
Why can't you? Does the bird have to do, like, public service in order to, like, showcase that it, like, does it have to, you know, do they ask the birds things like, what would you do if you had $1 million? Like, you know, that kind of thing? Do they have swimsuit competitions for the birds?
See, this is how cutthroat it is, right? Because Bird of the Year has faced a string of scandals. In 2018, fraudulent votes were cast in Australia for the shag. The next year, a large number of Russian votes sparked rumors of election meddling.
They
even have issues with Russians meddling
there
in their elections.
Is. That's right. There it is.
For
right.
Bird of the Year.
Got it. Okay, so we got to the nitty gritty, which is the Russians are interfering in every
election.
Apparently.
They don't want it to be this Kekapoo. Yeah. I think it's like the world's fattest parrot.
They don't want it to be that. Somebody's messing around with them and just to be like,
yep.
Yeah.
They're trying, and that maybe that's how the 1 year the bat won.
Yeah.
Right. Now, the bat did not win in 2020 or 2019. I think it won in 2018, but maybe that was foreshadowing.
Right. Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah. All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb. Coming up later on this in this show, we got Levin Reed at WBZ to talk Patriots. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, Philip on Twitter said that we were talking about Peyton Manning and, like, game shows. And I said, yeah, Peyton Manning is doing a game show. Like, he's got a really cool personality. Dwayne Wade was doing a game show. And Philip on Twitter said, I always wanted to host Press Your Luck. That was a classic as a kid. If you don't know Press Your Luck, you should. It's you know, no whammies, stop! And then they would go either on a prize or money, and or every now and then the whammy would come and it would take your money away. But like a lot of game shows, it had its scandal. There was a guy that memorized all the patterns of the pressure luck board, and he won an enormous amount of money. And then they didn't allow him to be on the show after that. They basically gave him his money and they said, yeah, he's now the all-time pressure luck champion, and there's no one that will be able to challenge him or beat him. Because they figured it out that he had memorized the book. There's like a documentary on this. There was a guy that, and here's the thing. I didn't know it was easy to get on a game show if your pursuit was to get on a game show. Like, if you memorized, like, remember the guy I was talking about on Price is Right that one time that memorized all the prices? He just made an Excel sheet of every single item that had been on Price is Right for, you know, did this for months and months and months and months, so that when he got to the game and was on the game, he could go on and go, oh, I know the big green egg is this amount of money, or I know the trailers are this much per square foot, or I know that this vacation usually runs in this area. And he just memorized them all. And so when he got on the show, he was able to win. But the problem is it easy to get on game shows? Because I thought it was impossible to get on game shows. Like when I was younger, they would say, would you like to be a contestant on Wheel of Fortune? Sell a self-addressed stamped envelope to blah, 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 Burbank, California, 90028. And then you would, then what would happen when you sent something that you wanted to be a guest on a show on Wheel? There'd be millions of people that wanted to be on the show. How do you get on? So if you dedicate your, you know, months and months and months to memorize the patterns on Pressure Luck, that's fine. But how in the world do you get on Pressure Luck? How do you win the lottery to be able to use that talent? Now, if you go on YouTube, you can actually see this. This is actually pretty funny. The guy is, he's watching the board, but at the same time, he knows he can't tip off the producers that he's watching the board. But where he got sloppy was that the producers were kind of keen on him because there were times where the host would say, all right, Joe, you got to spin. And he's like, beep, 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 beep. And then sometimes he would go, stop. And then sometimes he would pause and he'd wait and wait and wait and wait and wait and wait and then go, stop. And the producers were kind of keen on, there's no rhythm here. Like he's not doing it after, let's say, 3 seconds, or he's doing it after, like, the whole idea was it was random. It didn't matter whether you pressed it 1 second after the thing started or 5 seconds after the thing started. The idea was that you as a contestant, it was so random, it really didn't matter. But he knew it wasn't random. So if he knew that if he saw something on the screen, like something's in the corner, he knew that if he pressed it, the next thing would land on the boat and or $5,000 in a spin or something like that. So he was waiting for the right moment to avoid the whammy. And it was a really brilliant plan, but he was found out, but they didn't want to expose it. But can you imagine being on a game show, you're an executive producer or whatnot, and then all of a sudden this contestant is winning and winning and winning, and you're just panicking in the back because you know you can't stop it? Like, that's, I mean, it's got to be the worst. You're like, normally they usually go a couple of spins and then the whammy comes and wipes out all the money we were supposed to give him at the end of the show. But this case, this guy's got like high five figures now. I don't know what this is. I think he got up to $100,000, which back then was a ton of money, a fortune. It's like the guy that landed the perfect showcase on Price is Right. He got the exact digits, but he randomly guessed it, like not the last couple of digits, and he got it. But he knew the prices of everything in the showcase. He knew what the prices were because he had memorized the prices. And then the last part, he just guessed. But the problem was the producers looked at the exact price and said, oh, no, we've never had a contestant ever land the showcase price exactly to the dollar. So they went to Drew Carey and they said, we got a problem here. This is way too coincidental. Like, never is this has happened in the history of the game. And Drew Carey's immediate reaction to that was he cheated. He had, somebody got to him. This book of prizes got out. Some staffer got this out to somebody, and he's in on it. So when they went back to cut the show where he was doing the thing, Drew Carey is very unenthusiastic about this monumental moment in the history of The Price is Right. Bob Barker would have stopped the show. Like, all the music would have happened and dun, 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 and Bob Barker would have said, stop, stop. This, folks, has never, ever happened in the history. He would have celebrated. He would have, but they were so suspicious of him. Drew Carey was like, you nailed it on the nose, and then just let it be. Let it be. And then they tried to figure out if they could get the prizes back and not award him based on cheating, but they couldn't. They couldn't. He basically explained how he got it, and that was pretty much it. But no, the pressure luck documentary is really, really fascinating. I don't know if I've, because the guy said he was sweating because there was one point where he lost the pattern and he was trying desperately to get it back. But he also knew that as he was trying desperately to get it back in his head, he could have ruined it. Like, he could have hit it and the whammy would have come up and wiped out his $100,000 that he had. I loved game shows. Were the only thing on when I was a kid, when I was sick. Like, if I was sick from school, that was it. There was no Netflix. I couldn't get, I had to watch game shows. So Card Sharks, Pressure Luck. What else was on? Like Price is Right.
Price is Right. I still get excited when the Price is Right comes on.
I love Price is Right. I love it. I think it's got the best theme music of any game show.
Yeah.
Love it. But remember Card Sharks?
Oh, yeah.
Like, and higher, a low. Three, higher, and a seven, stay. And then they would ask a question, and then you would get to go to the board again, and they'd go, change that card, and you to a king, lower.
Yeah. That's why we always, like for Price is Right, they had all the different games. We always had our favorite game, and yeah. I still have mine. My game would be that dice game.
The dice game for the car?
For the car.
Yeah.
Where you had to, you know, go higher or lower, and you just, I mean, I would, every single time I would try to manipulate it just to roll a one or a six.
Yeah.
So you know.
I like Barb Barker would explain it. Now you roll the dice, and then you go higher or lower than the monetary yeah. value of the dice.
Like some of these games, it's like, I don't think you need to describe it anymore.
Yeah, if you get all five numbers correctly, you win the car.
Right.
This is great. Mountain Climber one was my favorite. Just keep climbing. Oh, yodely, lodely, lodely. Just get into that cliff. Oh, no. I didn't know how much Folgers coffee was. Darn it. Oh. All right. We'll talk some NFL when we come back. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
You know, the Sixers lost last night, but the Philadelphia Phillies won, the Flyers won, the Eagles won on Sunday. Philadelphia is becoming a very good hotbed for sports teams now.
I mean, we can't say Title Town yet because there aren't any.
No, they haven't won any, but...
But come on, guys.
I will tell you, you know, there's a certain friend of ours from Philadelphia that's got to be kind of excited.
Would they be insufferable?
That's what I'd like to know. They kind of were after the Super Bowl, but you almost kind of felt, like, happy for them in a way.
Yeah.
Like, I was like they beat the Patriots.
Because they beat the Patriots.
Good,
had they beaten anyone else, I don't know if we'd have been that happy.
Yeah, like that's a great point. Like, if they had won, let's say they beat the Cleveland Browns, right? Like, the long-suffering Cleveland Browns. You'd go, all right. Those are two franchises that never won a Super Bowl. Now they win a Super Bowl. Yay, right? Whatever. But if they had beaten, like, I don't know, like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, like they've had some success and whatnot, you'd be like, oh,
it's
all right,
like
I'm going to hear about it.
Who did the Cubs play in the World Series? Was it the Indians?
The Indians, yeah.
Like, neither one of those two teams had won a World Series
in
some
a very
years.
Long time. Yeah. So somebody was going to.
So somebody was going to be, like, the first in decades. And it just happened to be the Cubs. And we're like, all right, you know, we're happy for you, Cubs. But we would have been happy for you, too, Cleveland.
That's right. So, but, Eagles are undefeated. The Phillies are three games away from the World Series. And the Flyers are playing well. And the Sixers did lose last night, but still, they should be good.
I think the Phillies can do it because, I mean, they actually – I forget who was on their roster.
You know what's funny about that? It is – you're absolutely correct. It's like when you watch the game, you're like, oh, yeah, they got that guy and they got that guy. And you kind of went – they really went under the radar. They really did.
Yeah.
They were not a team that was – in the forefront of where we were in baseball. We were very top heavy, right? Because the Dodgers were playing well and the Mets and Braves looked like that was going to be fun. And the Yankees and the Astros are in the American League and Cleveland was winning their division. And there's a pretty good battle in the wild card, but not great. But then Milwaukee and St. Louis were battling in the Central for a good portion of the year. And St. Louis took it over. And then something happened in Milwaukee where they started to fall apart a bit and they were losing a bunch of games. And here came the Phillies. And the Phillies were playing well and winning games. And before you know it, the Phillies were in contention for this final wild card spot, and they got it. And Milwaukee, they got it on like the last week of the season. They got it with just a handful of games remaining. And then they took advantage of it by going to St. Louis and winning and then beating the Braves. But the thing is, and baseball's a little tricky with this. You'd like to think, and I think you pointed this out with the Padres-Dodgers series, is that there's always like this feeling like in the end, the talented team is just going to start showing up, right? Like you might get them in game one and you might sneak a game two, but eventually the pitching and the batting is going to be there. The reason why they won over 100 games. And in the Dodger case, it wasn't there. And in the Atlanta's case, it wasn't there. Those two teams losing, you know, winning over 100 games and then losing sort of reminded you that sometimes it doesn't show up. In the case of the Padres and the Phillies, this isn't the case where one team is better than the other team. This isn't the case of, don't worry, Padre fans, when San Diego shows up, they'll take care of it. The Phillies are just as good as they are, and the Padres are just as good as the Phillies. Like, it's like the Phillies could sweep. This could go seven games. This could go five. Like, there's not a feeling like, well, when the Padres wake up, this thing will be over and over quickly, like you had with the Atlanta Braves and the Dodgers. The Braves lost the first game 7-6, but when they won game two and evened up the series heading back to Philadelphia, there was a lot of feeling like, okay, calm down, everybody. They'll wrap this thing up in Philly and then they'll get out of here. But the Phillies, they scored 17 runs in the last two games of that series and annihilated the Braves, just annihilated them. But in this series, it's evenly matched. Now, the Yankees and the Astros, this is either going to be two things, all right? Oh, no, I'm sorry, three things. The Astros are either going to win this quickly, four or five games, probably not four, but five games. This will go seven and it will go the Astros, or it will go seven with the Yankees. This will not be a quick series for the Yankees. The pitching is too good for the Astros. So the Astros can win this quickly. Both of them can win it in a long series, but the Yankees are not going to win this quickly. And the Astros have just owned the Yankees, but the Dodgers own the Padres too. And that sort of throws a monkey wrench into those analytics of regular season baseball. And remember, regular season baseball is, I mean, I hate to say it, it sounds cliche and sort of like, you know, something like it's like a basic take. But postseason baseball is played completely different than regular season baseball. Like, you go into a football game, into an NFL game, and you're trying to do the kind of the things that you are good at, right? Like, if you're a running team, and that's what your bread and butter is, you go into the playoffs, you're a running team. Baseball, there's so many more strategical elements in a postseason series than you wouldn't have if the Astros showed up in September or October, not October, but like August or July for a three-game set. You might, you know, use your pitcher a little longer, you might rest your bullpen, but in the playoffs, obviously, everybody's on the table. Everybody can pitch. Everybody can go. There was a big complaint yesterday with Cleveland because Aaron Civale got the start yesterday, and Civale hasn't pitched well at all lately. And in fact, I don't think he's pitched in the postseason. But Terry Francona, they said, look, Francona should have used an opener to get into the game and then bring in Civale rather than have Civale start. It lasted a third of an inning. And so that element you would not see in a regular season game in July. You would not even see that part of the game challenged. Not very many people would be screaming and hollering on a July 10th that you didn't go with an opener and then bring in Aaron Civale, who'd been struggling. Instead, you would go, well, Aaron Civale got the start and he didn't pitch well, but there's tomorrow. And there was also this conversation of, would you use Shane Bieber on short rest in a do or die situation? Or would you better off going with the rested Civale and hope that he pitches well? He didn't pitch well. And so in the end, there is more strategical elements than a regular season series. That's why, again, the Padres and the Dodgers, you combine some struggles with the Dodgers with a different way of looking at the game for San Diego. And in the same way, the Yankees and the Astros, you can't really go on a 5-2 regular season record for Houston and say, well, that's just going to continue when they play at Minute Maid Park and then the Yankee Stadium in this 7-game set. There's going to be different ways that the Yankees are going to be able to utilize different lineups, a different strategy and whatnot. But I think where this series is going to be problematic for the Yankees is, again, coming off a long series with Cleveland that included rain delays and rainouts, and going up against an Astros team that, despite playing an 18-inning marathon in Game 3, at least got rid of the Mariners in three games and now are well-rested and everything is set for them. And I think that's going to be a problem for New York. I honestly don't think the pitching for the Yankees is as solid right now, because Nestor Cortez, one of their best pitchers, just got used. They're not going to get to Garrett Cole won't get used. Jameson Taillon, if Jameson Taillon was so great, they would have used him last night and trusted him more and said, even though Nestor Cortez might be pitching better, we trust you enough in Game 5 and keep the original rotation together so that you could go with Cortez should you win. Now, the mindset is, but you don't know if you're going to win. But they didn't trust Taillon enough to not go with Cortez in a do-or-die situation. I know I brought this up one time before, but in the 86 World Series, Game 6 that was won by the Mets, that was a game Roger Clemens started. But the Game 7 that the Mets forced by winning that epic, you know, finish was supposed to be Oil Can Boyd. But the Red Sox went, we're not going with Oil Can Boyd, we're going with Bruce Hurst. He was much, much more, he was much rested because Game 7 was rained out on Sunday. And Aaron Boone did the exact same thing. But, you know, Oil Can Boyd had a pretty good year, but he wasn't Bruce Hurst. Same thing with the Yankees. I mean, Jameson Taillon's a good pitcher, but he's not Nestor Cortez. You got to go with Nestor Cortez. But what does that mean? You got Jameson Taillon opening up against Justin Verlander. Now, maybe you don't want Nestor Cortez going up against Verlander. Maybe you'll take your chances that if Taillon can get us four good innings, we might be able to escape this if we can tag Verlander like Seattle did in the playoffs. Maybe. But the Yankees are going to be problematic with their pitching because they've got to set that, and it's not going to be set. And the Astros not only can pitch, but they can hit. So this is I'm really looking forward to it. I said in hour one, I'm sorry, Cleveland, and look, if you had won that game, great. But I think the reality of it is there is What do you do? Here's the thing. If you're an average baseball fan and you don't live in Houston and you don't live in New York and you're watching the ALCS, is it which one of these teams are you pulling for? The devil I know, the devil I'm not sure of. Like, which one? Because neither one of these teams are Angels, right? Yankees are hated across the country outside of New York. The Astros have had this cheating accusation over their head for the last couple of years now. Which one? Now, I'm sorry if you're a purist and would rather have seen Tampa Bay, Cleveland, or Seattle, Cleveland, whatever. But to me, I think this is a matchup that I've wanted since the start of this. And it has nothing to do with their records. I just think that this is a fascinating series in the postseason. Third time in 6 years, there's drama. There's the best players in the American League, if not Major League Baseball, that are in this thing. And yeah, while the Mariners are a good story with Julio Rodriguez, of course, the Yankees with Aaron Judge and the Astros with everybody they have is a better story. It's a better series. And again, for a lot of you, again, it might be the devil I know against the devil I don't know, two villains of baseball. Fine. Look at it that way. Root for the other team out of the National League then. Like, root for the Phillies or the Padres to win it all. But let's get this one going. Like, I love it. And the Astros, that cheating scandal, whether you believe it or not, and there's so much evidence that it did happen, whether it was effective or, you know, whether it really was effective, that's kind of up to everybody's personal debate. My opinion, I think it helped, but I don't think it was as big a deal, but it was still, you know, cheating. But the reality of it is they went from a lovable franchise to this sort of villainous role as well. And the Yankees always had it because of their success and their money, and they're in New York, and there's an East Coast bias and all of that. But now you got an ALCS featuring these two teams that bring in a lot of baggage, and not in the most positive way, but I still think it's better. I still think it's better. I mean, really, Ron, let's be honest. If we had Tampa Bay in this thing again, what would we be doing? I don't know anybody on the Rays.
Yep.
They don't spend any money. The Rays payroll is the cost of my food budget. Right? Like, we'd be just playing that game over and over again. Here's a team that doesn't spend. Now they're in the world. ALCS.
And you're absolutely right. I mean, Astros, Yankees, this is what we've been wanting this entire time. You know, I'm certain there's probably a small contingency that wanted Astros Guardians.
Right. Sure.
But even
and again,
Houston,
if you're a Cleveland fan, I'm not going to tell you this is better for you. It's not better for you. Your team lost. Of course not.
But I can say this. Even in Houston, most people wanted the Yankees. They didn't want the Guardians.
Right. I'm talking about you Rockies fan in Denver that can't stand East Coast bias. Settle in and enjoy these two bad boy teams. Just relax. I'm really selling this. I know for a lot of you.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Come on.
It's going to be a good series.
What do you want? It's like, you know, everyone used to say, I don't want the Patriots in the Super Bowl. You kind of did. Let's be honest. You wanted to root against them. You wanted to see if another team could beat them and Brady and Belichick could lose on the biggest stage. Come on.
No, that's why we said a few minutes ago. I mean, you know, if Philly starts winning all these sports, you know, they're going to be an insufferable fan.
Yeah.
But we kind of like the fact that they won the Super Bowl just because they played the Patriots.
If there was a team that you could rally behind, a Philly team, if you were outside of Philadelphia, was rooting for them to win that Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Just like the 2009 World Series. I know a lot of people are like, I don't really like Philadelphia, but I'm rooting for them over the Yankees.
Right.
All right. I get it. Yeah, I understand. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. It's Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, coming up in hour number three, Levin Reed is going to join us. Good friend from Boston, WBZ. I always like it when he comes on. Very energetic, but we're going to talk about the Patriots. They're 3-3. They've got this quarterback thing with Bailey Zappe, third string guy now, becoming kind of a little megastar. Whatever. But they've got Mac Jones on a high ankle sprain. So we'll talk to him about the Pats and their season so far. We're also going to get into this owners meeting yesterday in the NFL that Jim Irsay now has kind of publicly said about Dan Snyder, what many may be feeling in that room about Dan Snyder. But as we talked about it last week, there's a cautious feeling amongst the NFL that maybe Dan Snyder would go quote unquote nuclear with things that he knows about owners if indeed he is forced out of this league. But Irsay speaking publicly, which is not a surprise because it's kind of what he does. He's actually not a bad Twitter follower. Like sometimes you cringe, but then sometimes you go, wow, it's kind of cool that he's this open with people. But he's at least willing to say, hey, you know what, media? I'll tell you what's going on. We might have a problem here.
And you know what else, too? He doesn't have any skeletons in the closet because all his skeletons have been exposed.
Yeah, he even said that. He goes, if there's an investigation into me, I just shrug it off. He's been through that before.
Yeah.
I mean, what he's
been, what, DUI? Was there a drug thing, too?
I believe there was. Yeah, didn't he have, like, a suitcase of something one time? Yeah. So, in the end, that you get some guys that are like that. And then, you know, Roger Goodell had to come out and say, and he said, he goes, I told the owners, don't speak publicly about this. You know, Roger Goodell can only advise. He's not going to tell them what to do. So he's almost, it's like, as your lawyer, I highly recommend that you don't speak to the police. But if you want to speak to the police, you speak to the police. It's the same thing here. Goodell is not saying you all are forbidden from speaking publicly about Dan Snyder. He's basically saying, hey guys, as the commissioner and sort of your advisor into the business end of this thing, I'm telling you, don't talk to the media about this. And Irsay's like, whatever. But Irsay knows the room and is the room ready to pull the trigger. We'll talk about that coming up, as well as the Patriots and some other news and notes around the NFL. I've also got a couple of college notes to get to, including another fine that's coming Tennessee's way. Don't tear the goalposts, folks. And if you do, dispose of it properly. It's all next.